from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Welcome to the G and Ursula Show. G is still off today. He is nursing his very sore neck. Mike Lewis is in once again. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. You are just doing a great job these last couple of days. Okay, coming up in the next half hour, Mickey Gomez is going to join us. Always fun when she joins the show. But right now, I want to say a big welcome to Nathaniel from Woodinville. He owns a barbershop between Woodinville and Snohomish, and he says he's been listening to the show since day one, but this was the first time that he was compelled to text in. So if you are someone like that,
don't stop at that point because I really not need to know what happened at this point.
No.
Or is it not even readable on air?
No, it's beautiful. And then I responded and he was like, is this really Ursula who's responding? I'm like, yes, it is.
It is the Ursula bot.
And anymore,
who automatically responds to texts in a polite fashion.
I bring this up because I want to encourage all of you who've been kind of sitting on the sidelines, maybe thinking, I want a text, or gosh, you know, Mike is just really hacking me off today, and I need to say something. Today is your chance. 888-973-5476.
I appreciate that. 888-973
Cairo. You upsetting anybody?
In the last time I got a text like that, weirdly enough, looked a lot like your phone number.
Yeah, if anyone's going to upset anyone, it's going to be me. It's going to be our next guest.
Have we ever had, just as quick aside, Chef, have we ever had another host text in? That would be yes.
Yes.
All right, maybe
yes.
I don't need to know that story.
You don't need to know.
Yes!
We are going to move on right now. Mike?
What's new? Act 10.
Okay. So we need to talk about what is going on in Olympia because a lot is happening right now. And our reporter, Matt Markovich, is here. As we speak, there's a lot happening in regards to this police pursuit bill. So fill us in.
Well, yesterday, the Republicans tried to force a vote for this police pursuit bill. It's basically the changes which allow the police to pursue a vehicle maybe suspected in violent crimes. That's the addition to what is currently available. So that's the only real big change in the bill. But it's a big change that police want. But it's been delayed in the Rules Committee. Now, here's a little lesson on how the sausage is made in Olympia. The Democrats control everything. So the Democrats, and it's mixed reviews on whether Democrats want this bill or not to go forward or not. So it has to go into the Rules Committee, which is controlled by the Speaker of the House, a Democrat. But Republicans get an option to pull what's known as pull a bill to the House floor. J.T. Wilcox, the minority leader, tried twice to pull this bill to the House floor, and the Democrats in the Rules Committee said no. So what the Republicans did is to try to do an end around yesterday where they went to the full House and said, and the full House can do this, if everybody in the full House, a majority, say, let's bring this to the bill to the floor, it'll happen. So the Republicans tried to do that and got rejected. And, if I just want to play this one little bit here about the guy, Representative Eric Robertson, who's a Republican, this is what he had to say on the House floor to try and push it to the vote of the full House.
It's important legislation that deserves the debate of this full House, Madam Speaker. The voices of our communities need to be heard. It's been vetted. I urge a yes vote.
And the majority, Democratic Majority Leader Joe Fitzgibbon responded.
We have an established process by which bills come out of the Rules Committee and onto the second reading calendar. This motion seeks to circumvent that process.
Now, I had emails with Eric Robertson who said, no, we're not circumventing this process. This is a tradition. We can do this. And that's where it sits. So right now, all these bills, either in the House or the Senate, that don't have a big fiscal tag to it, have to pass by noon today or they're dead. And this is in jeopardy of not passing by noon today. So behind the scenes right now, and I've been trying to deal with certain lawmakers to find out what's really going on, will this go to a vote? We don't know, as is. There is a scramble now, I'm being told, to maybe incorporate some elements of this pursuit bill in another bill that deals with pulling people over for a broken taillight. You know, they're scrambling to try and get elements of this bill into maybe another bill to try and save it. But that's where we sit at this second.
Okay, Matt, and it is a lot of sausage to try to...
Is it a lot of sausage?
To try to track. Okay. But let's talk about why this is so important. Because I just want to remind our listeners that just a couple of days ago, we told you the story about the ATM being stolen out of a building down in... Mm-hmm. Was it Lakewood, Chef? Or
yeah, Lakewood.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And where because of the new laws that were passed recently, the sergeant we spoke with said the officer, even though he was right behind the car or the truck that was dragging the stolen ATM, because of the new laws, they were not able to chase because you have to have, you know, probable cause of mm-hmm. some violent crime, mm-hmm. and you know, et cetera, which seemed ridiculous. My quote was, that's nuts. Someone is stealing an ATM. You should be able to pursue them because there was a hit and run. But they said no because of this, the changes in the law. So what's being debated right now in Olympia, or not being debated, and the Democrats, it sounds like, want to shut it down, is an idea to change it so that there would be more of an ability for officers to pursue suspects.
Well, the Republicans want to change that. I know Mike knows how Olympia works very well. The Republicans want to make the changes. There's Democrats who actually co-sponsored this bill.
Right. So it is actually bipartisan.
Yeah, it is a bipartisan bill on the House side. But those Democrats, we don't know how they're voting behind the scenes in their caucuses, whether they really want to be. It's a counting vote day. Where Speaker of the House is counting all the Democrats. Do we have enough to either defeat this bill or allow it to go forward? And up until this moment, right now, no vote on the House or the Senate, and it's controlled by Democrats, has gone into defeat because both the House leader and the Senate leaders have counted the votes and they know what votes will pass. And this one is in jeopardy because no one knows what's going to do.
Yeah, and this is for those of you who want to know how the sausage is made, not sausage you necessarily want to consume. What happens is to keep something from going to a public vote because everybody is worried about their next campaign, you kill it in committee. So that's really what happens is they hold it in committee. Now, sometimes they hold it in committee for leverage to get changes mm-hmm. that they want. And sometimes they hold it in committee because they just don't want to let it get to the floor and have somebody have to make an uncomfortable vote mm-hmm. on something that maybe they're on the fence about or they have a real divided constituency over. And I don't know about the police pursuit having those things. It seems like it's an interesting one because it seems like they've got actually an idea here that makes some sense as far as expanding it. But I don't know why the decision isn't to keep. I think that the collateral damage with police pursuits, we all know, can be fairly significant, given that it is maybe sometimes just a car being stolen. Right. Mm-hmm. However, why not ramp up the penalty for that particular crime and not worry as much about being able to pursue on that particular crime? I don't understand why, because you can so catastrophically affect someone financially who's on the lower end of the economic scale by taking their car. Literally, they literally right. cannot go to work anymore.
Right.
Why not ramp up the penalty on that and make the penalty to a place where when people do steal a car, they realize that it's a significant, because now it is, you're rubber stamped and you're back out.
It's funny you mention that, because there is a bill about car racing and doing donuts and drifting in the legislature right now where, and I can't tell you exactly where it sits, it had passed its committee, where if you are get tagged twice, you get arrested twice for drifting, they take your car.
There you go.
It's a forfeiture. It's actually put in the bill.
There you go. That's the type of penalty that actually is going to start changing behavior.
Okay, but if we're looking at what is at stake right now, so if this doesn't pass, then what? If nothing happens and the Democrats who hold the power are able to not let it come out in some different variation, what happens?
Well, technically it's dead, but in Olympia, nothing is dead until sine die, the last day.
The land of zombies.
Yeah, yeah. So what could really happen is that behind the scenes, Democrats and Republicans can get together on the House side and try this motion again. They can bring it to the floor. It's totally okay. And if they get a majority, then the floor has to hear it. They're circumventing what the Speaker of the House wants. So it is a possibility it can be resurrected, like from the dead, but that's how it will be done.
What is there a particular in this bill that slightly expands police pursuit authority? Is there something very specific in there that is really the key in all of this? Or is it just unclear really what the specific dispute is?
It's not what they've been adding, which is a, to chase violent criminals, somebody who is involved in domestic violence.
And probable cause instead of reasonable suspicion.
Yeah, they're dropping it to reasonable suspicion.
Okay,
probable cause is a higher bar.
Okay.
So they can add this. That's not the real issue. It's the real issue of pursuits. Killing innocent people on the side of the road. That's what Monker Dhingra, who runs the Senate side of this thing, didn't even let the bill be heard in her committee because of that. And they want to study the matter. And there's a bill that would study the matter that's very much alive. And that's what they're going to hang their hat on this year, maybe, is study the matter and then come back a year from now and say, here's what we found out, whether this is police pursuits are really do killing more people, innocent people. That's the rub.
Gotcha.
Okay, let's talk about some of the gun safety bills that are in play still.
Well, the one main one that happened last night, which is the one that's the most controversial, is requiring people who want to buy a gun to take a gun safety class. Doesn't matter whether you're an experienced rifleman or a newbie, you have to take a class on gun safety.
See, now that sounds reasonable to me. We've said that before, but there's a lot of pushback.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of pushback. There's people who have been having concealed weapons permits. I mean, do you have to require these people to, if they want to buy a new gun? Under this law, they would have to, and it would last. This class is good for 5 years. And they'll have to have a 10-day background check in this one. This is a local background. And by the way, background checks now are going to move to the state because the federal FBIs are getting out of the business in that. And Washington State Patrol is ramping up to do background checks for gun ownership. So that passed last night, and I don't have the real vote. It was like 52 to 44, three people weren't there. It went for hours. This is like a midnight vote. Mm. And at least it moved forward. There were enough votes to move this forward, this gun legislation. Again, Republicans all against it. They're in the minority. They voted all against it. But it got enough Democratic votes to move forward. And so now it goes to the Senate. Again, these are things that may just absolutely die in the Senate. I'm real quickly, we're going back to the police pursuit. Even if the House passes this bill today, goes to the Senate, to the committee whose chairperson voted not even to listen to something like that. So she may not even bring it to the floor of her committee, and then it dies in the Senate.
What a lot of people forget, I actually am a big fan of I don't mind a waiting period. I don't mind training. I don't mind all of that coming along with and registration coming along with firearms. I think that's entirely appropriate. And those are actual restrictions that have not found to be unconstitutional. So that can move through and likely would survive a constitutional challenge. However, I'm not actually as convinced that some of this stuff makes anyone safer, even though I like it and I support it. I mean, if you look at what actually happens, the numbers of gun deaths, what is it, 47% of gun deaths nationally are suicide, right? Mm-hmm. The other 47%, I think, are homicide. And then there's this other, which is accidental shootings and things like that. Mm-hmm. The other is really what's going to be affected by this. And I think, again, that's good. What the funny thing about it is that people forget the evolution of the NRA. When I was a kid and I went to join the Boy Scouts, this is in 1930s. In the 1970s when I did this, you actually got an NRA membership with your scout membership. And the reason you got an NRA membership was strictly because NRA back then was training and safety. They did not have that political arm. That evolved during the Reagan administration and then beyond. It wasn't what it was back then. And I went through the NRA gun safety course because I did, I had a pellet gun. I don't know. My dad did a little bit of hunting. My uncle did a lot of hunting. And it was great. And actually, it's all lessons that were super appropriate for me to know how to, handle a weapon. I don't understand why anyone doesn't want people to actually go through a gun safety course when they buy a gun. If they've already done it and they can qualify, great. But why not make everyone? It makes no sense to me at all.
Because I think the argument is the Second Amendment people is a right. Since it's a right, like your vote, you didn't have to go through a safety class or some class to learn how to vote. You have the right to vote. you have the right to bear arms. And that's the argument used.
Well, what about the IDs for voting? I mean, we put restrictions on this stuff all the time.
But here's the thing. I mean, overshadowing all this is known as the Bruin decision back in New York that happened last year,
right,
where basically it just came right down to real basics. You have the right to bear arms. And so we're starting over again with that Supreme Court decision. So any kind of restriction where you have to wait 10 days or you have to take a class, those are impeding my right to own and bear arms. And so that's what this Bruin decision is, overshadowing all this, whether any of these laws that they pass in Washington State could face a challenge in court.
Yeah, I mean, the Bruin is not the only decision, right? There's a variety of decisions, and they're actually in direct conflict with each other. But there are states that have all of these sort of restrictions, and they're not actually been found unconstitutional. I like the fact that Washington's doing it. What I'm saying is I'm actually not convinced that this actually adds to public safety.
So you like the idea, but it might not achieve the goal or the things we're hoping to achieve in terms of reducing these mass shootings.
Won't achieve that goal, but is still a good thing.
Matt?
Yes.
Thank you. So you're going to let us know. So is there any other bill that you're watching closely today?
Well, there's a lot of them. I mean, it's like when you have so many and you ask me to pick one.
I know.
There's a lot. There's the tax bill that that the Dow Constantine talked about yesterday. Basically, he's saying we don't have enough money. And so if the state legislature doesn't allow, let counties tax you more, we're going to be cutting essential services like cops, or not cops, but he listed a whole bunch off yesterday.
Well, he actually did say it would affect the sheriff's department and a whole bunch of other essential services.
So he's putting the onus of county spending on the state legislature. Yeah, here.
That's not a good message. Matt, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, still ahead, Mickey Gomez is going to join us. We're going to have a fun conversation with her. This is the G and Ursula Show. The G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Mike Lewis is in. Just a reminder that we love it when you engage with us on our state roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Just got the chance to meet some of our longtime listeners who, for some reason, decided to text in today for the first time. So you can join them. And at the end of the show, we will share some of your feedback. But right now, we want to talk about something. I thought we were going to talk about something fun, but actually, this is really a sad story. If you haven't been following it, Mexican and U.S. authorities are now searching for the armed men who kidnapped four Americans in the volatile border city of Matamoros last week. Two of the victims were found dead yesterday. The two survivors were returned to Texas, where they are now getting medical care. And traveling to Matamoros for medical treatment or for work used to be a very regular, completely normal thing. And our own Mickey Gomez knows a little about that, and she joins us right now. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning.
So you were looking into this, and this is something that you are familiar with, at least the travel. I mean, this is just such a sad story, and I was hoping for a different outcome.
It really is. And of course, traveling to Mexico for, you know, healthcare is totally normal. It's something that my family has done since I can remember. I mean, as a little girl, we would go see the dentist. My family lives in Austin, although they're originally from Donna, Texas, which is along the Rio Grande Valley. We have a family cemetery there, the Handy Cemetery. Like, my roots are and come from South Texas. So crossing the border into Reynosa or Matamoros or Progreso, totally normal and acceptable, especially going to the dentist or seeing the chiropractor or my grandmother going to see an endocrinologist for her diabetes or, you know, having surgery done. it was an everyday thing for us.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons mm-hmm. being that it's so much cheaper over there.
It is a lot cheaper, and a lot of people go, ooh, you went over there. Well, yes, these doctors go through, you know, the same, almost the same type of schooling that American doctors do. And believe it or not, there are a lot of doctors from Mexico that do their residencies here and then go back to Mexico and practice. One of my good friends is a Mexican citizen, and he practices medicine here in the United States. He is a cancer doctor, an OBGYN cancer doctor. So there's no stigma in my family being able to cross the border and go and have these medical procedures done. So this woman from the Carolinas, correct? She's from South Carolina, I believe. Traveling to Mexico to have surgery done sounds like a normal thing. Wanted to have a tummy tuck. The sad thing is that she went to Matamoros, and right now there is a warning stating that Americans should stay away because of the cartel. And unfortunately, they got caught in the middle of it.
And do we know any more about what exactly happened? Because they had just crossed the border, right?
Right.
And then they came under fire.
You know, I can only speculate that they crossed the border in, I believe, a minivan with U.S. plates on it. And the next thing that that we knew is they were fired upon and kidnapped. So that in itself is something that we don't do, is we don't drive our car across the border. We walk across the border. Simply because it's just a given that when you do drive your car across the border, there really isn't a safe place to park your car unless you really trust where you're going. That's my family's impression. So we would park in Brownsville. We would walk across, or we would take a friend's car, a family member's car with Mexican plates, and cross the border.
Yeah, and part of the problem is, I understand it down there, this is across the border from Brownsville, Texas, right?
Yes.
And that's where most people are passing through at that mm-hmm. particular point, having been down in that area. And this is an interesting sort of the side note to this, and I think you touched on it, is the what they refer to broadly as medical tourism, right? Mm-hmm. People who travel, and they're not just traveling over there because they want some elective plastic surgery. They're traveling there for vital affordable health care. But here is the rub, is that when you're traveling to Mexico for this health care, and I have friends who have done it there, I've gone to Cuba, gone to Thailand, a variety of other places that actually have, believe it or not, folks, top quality medical care. I mean, there's good and bad in every country.
Mm-hmm.
They're traveling with cash. And this is how they get targeted. If you are a person and somebody knows that you've made an appointment, or somebody just suspects that you are of a certain age and you're traveling to this place because they see every day hundreds of people going across the border specifically for medical treatment. This is what happens when you don't have good medical care in your own country. They go across there, and they know that if they're going there, they're carrying cash.
Some are carrying cash. I mean, the good news is that Mexico is modern, and you can use your debit card there. You can actually, you know, you can do Cash App. You can do those types of things because they have accounts that are set up. So not everybody is carrying cash these days, but true to the point that, yes, a lot of people do cash exchanges down there.
It's three of my friends who've gone across, and this is in, mm-hmm. you know, I understand that they have, you know, ATMs and things like that, having mm-hmm. been to Mexico a whole bunch, but still have said, like, they're told, like, you get X price if you just show up with cash. And so frequently what they'll do is they'll be more comfortable taking out an ATM in say Brownsville or in the States, mm-hmm. drive across with the money and then pay. But part of the problem is that we're not taking care of those people here with health care.
No, we're not.
Well, yes.
I mean, you can cross the border. I'm sorry, Ursula, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, what I was going to say, though, what is unusual about this case is that the FBI says, you know, organized crime groups in Mexico typically would leave U.S. citizens alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to get in trouble with the U.S. government. So in this case, they're saying that there might have been some kind of confusion.
There might have been. And just the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's unfortunate. But I by no means am frowning upon, you know, these friends and families crossing the border to go and have some kind of medical assistance
not, right?
done.
No.
You know, what I do know is that my grandmother would go there and get her prescriptions filled. And what's interesting is that in Mexico, you don't need a prescription. Really, we would just walk into the pharmacy and she would say, I need penicillin.
That's the way it is
and
in the Philippines,
she would get
too.
Penicillin. Yeah. Or I need some kind of antibiotic, and then you would get it. Or a pain medication Oxycontin. Is that what it's called? Yeah. My grandmother would just go there, pay cash, or pesos and get it, and we'd leave.
Yeah. Mexico actually attracts more than 1 million medical tourists every year. So
I think
it is
1.8 million or something like that.
It's not that unusual.
And primarily primarily on these border towns because it's mostly people. Sometimes it's people who are flying in and going to a specific place, but a lot of times it's people driving across the border.
Yes. But just speaking of medical costs, you just reminded me. So now, you guys know that I just recently had my gallbladder removed, right. But my first gallbladder attack was while I was in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I have insurance, the hospital that the ER I went to didn't take my, I was going to have to bill my insurance here, which I still haven't done. But after all the testing that they did, everything that they did, I mean, they ran every single test I had, you know, MRIs, this, that, the other thing. I was there in the ER for 8 hours. My bill at the end of all of it, without insurance, was $290.
Are you kidding me?
No. There you go.
I can remember having my teeth done in Mexico for $10.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
So if you're just wondering, what is the attraction? Well, that's one of the attractions.
No, it's entirely, and it makes complete sense. I mean, if I lived there, this is what I would do. And I have zero question.
And I will say that, you know, we would go to Reynosa because we knew that Matamoros was starting to be overrun by the cartel. Right. And so instead, my grandmother didn't stop. She would take us. We'd stay in Donna or in Brownsville. We'd go to Reynosa. We'd go to Las Flores. We'd go to Progreso. There are other border town cities that are safe, that are cartel run, but still.
Oh, goodness. I mean, maybe the bottom line is, well, why should we have to do that if we, you know,
and the other
we
thing,
should be able to get it here in this country.
My Manjaro is cheaper there.
Yeah, well, the State Department also now, and you know, on the more entertainment end of things, the State Department issued a warning about traveling there. And this is also, you will not be surprised about this, a big spring break route as well.
Because South Padre Island is right there. Brownsville is 50 miles away. And then it's legal to drink alcohol in Mexico earlier than it is here in the United States. So they rely on that tourism, on that spring break tourism.
Absolutely.
Mickey, thank you.
Thanks, welcome.
Mickey.
Okay, still ahead, scenarios when we solve other people's problems. This is the G and Ursula Show. We're already rounding out our second hour. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we do agree to disagree. And one of the questions we're going to be talking about is whether the parents of an accused shooter in Michigan, should they be facing manslaughter charges? And it's an interesting story, and it's something that we want you all to weigh in on as well on our state roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. But right now, it is time for scenarios.
Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Hey, guys. My wife is about to complete dental hygiene school and is in the process of looking for a job. She has an offer from our daughter's pediatric dentist, and she's really excited about it. But I feel just a little bit strange. The dentist seems like a really great guy. He's great with the kids, engaging with the parents, married, has great banter with the staff. But every time I've gone there, it's impossible not to notice it's just him and a whole staff of young, very attractive women. Granted, it's a dental clinic for kids, and I don't see a ton of male dental hygienists in the industry, but there's very clearly a type the dentist likes to hire. No one over the age of 30, including his office manager. They're all, shall I say, very shapely young women who are very well made up, despite the masks. Now, I'm not worried about my wife. She can handle herself, and I trust her implicitly, but the dynamic at the office feels strange to me. Should I raise this red flag with her? Does it even seem like a red flag? Ursula Reutin, what say you?
I would guess that it's not just a coincidence. So if you're married to this so this is your wife and she's going to be working in there, of course I would mention it. But Justin says, hey, did you notice that, you know, XYZ does that?
They're all hot, just like you.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say there's a compliment. You could actually turn this. Someone could turn this into their favor by saying, "Hey, look how well you rank in this particular office place." The problem, also, though, in dental, not the problem, but the issue. What is it? Something like having a couple of friends, including a sister-in-law who went to school for dental hygiene. It's like 97% women.
It is.
Like that profession. It's very, very few men go into that profession. And so odds are you're going to have more.
Not 90% women under 30, though.
Well,
it is very taxing, though, on the body, too.
Right. Yes.
And
oh,
I
no,
know
absolutely.
That for a lot of, you know, the dental hygienists that I talk to, they talk about how, you know, you're always kind of in these awkward positions and right. it causes, you know, body aches, et cetera, et cetera. And it's probably something that attracts more people. But of younger ages. That said, that's really unusual.
I would also say, though, that, I mean, if there is anything going on here that is, you know, potent questionable, I think the other women in the office would probably be great sounding boards to find out, like, hey, I looked around. This particular group of us are here. Is there any problems you associate with that? And if not, then you gotta, like, you know, if it's a good gig and it's a good person and right. you're working in a good office that does good work, I don't know. Seems exactly. to be like a no-brainer.
Maybe there isn't a problem. Now, I got to bring something up, though, because I was just there a couple of days ago. Have you guys ever eaten at Joey's?
Hey, why did Joey's come immediately to mind
because
when I read this?
Every single time I go to Joey's, I'm like, there isn't an ugly person in this restaurant.
Hey, look, it's a guy. There's a guy manager. There's a guy bartender. And then what appears to be a harem of young women, right? That's like, yeah. that is the appearance of it.
Even the men are very young and very attractive.
In New York, in cocktail bars and in higher end restaurants, it became, and I think it still is, very, very common, although mostly it's online now, that when you submitted a resume, you submitted a headshot as well.
Okay, but
oh, perfect.
I need to
right.
ask you as a bar owner, yeah. how do you get away with that?
Well, I don't. I mean, you know, so
okay.
so
no, I know,
so there
but,
you go.
But let's say, how does an establishment that, whether it's Twin Peaks,
I think it's crazy. We could literally track. We have bartenders ranging from 60s to low 30s, maybe the high 20s. And there is no correlation between somebody being, you know, conventionally speaking, more attractive or less attractive or this or older or younger or man or woman. Like, we look at the tips. We look at the sales.
Yeah.
No correlation at all. I think people who go down that road and are not just going for someone who's good at their job are making a massive mistake, because there is really no good reason to go down that road. Not at all. That is your own prejudices and has nothing to do with your customers.
Unless you want to surround yourself with beautiful people, and that is your express goal is, I want eye candy all around me. I own this place. I don't know. When I walk into a place like this, I get kind of the creep vibes, because I'm like, I see what's going on. You may not be harassing your staff. At the same time, you're intentionally surrounding yourself with people that you can ogle. That is my thought process.
But my point is, aren't there dangers of being accused of, whether it's age discrimination or... you know, any type, I want to say weight discrimination. But
I mean, there's
where you are basically picking people based on their.
Oh, no. I agree that all of that is, I guess you're potentially open for it, although in the service industry, hiring good looking staff is not an exception. It's endemic, right? I mean, that happens every place you go into, I think people, and that's not true just with the service industry. That is true across the board. That sort of hiring happens in every field, but in some fields more than others. And in particular, when you're referencing like dental hygienists, when you walk into the dentist's office, it does seem to be women of a certain age category. But I wouldn't say that's probably true with the one place that person wrote in about.
Yeah. So, well,
I'd
Chef,
say it's
what
true
do you
everywhere.
Think? Just real quick.
I think it's weird. I think it's creepy.
You
I don't know.
It up.
Yeah. I think it's creepy.
I feel like you can't judge your book by its cover, although I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt on this one. That's a classic case of typecasting, and you're right, Ursula. I think Joey's the people who work there are just way too attractive to be a coincidence.
I have yet, and now I will say, I've never gotten bad service at Joey's either.
There you go.
So,
how about
apparently
that?
It's a formula that,
that
works
food,
for them.
Though?
And that's good, too. Those lettuce wraps? Yum. Okay, you know what? Okay, yeah.
Hold on that a little
bit. There's
a scammer. Okay, I'm sure you have good food, too.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that the quality... I'm not saying anything about the quality of food at a place Joey's, but I would say that it's pretty clear who they're hiring and why they're hiring.
And what their priorities are.
And yet I keep going. Okay, still ahead, agree to disagree. This is the G and Ursula Show.